You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Listening to Reparations in Action here on Uhuru Radio on the Uhuru News Network. My name is Jamie, and I'm your host and a member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement here in the Uhuru Radio studio. With me is our fantastic engineer, Darren St. Pierre. Uhuru Darren. And in the interest of time, we want to thank everyone for tuning in this May 31st, 2015. This past weekend in New York City was the Left Forum. Organizers from the Uhuru movement, including Jesse Neville and Chairwoman Penny Hess of the African People's Solidarity Committee, attended along with African People's Socialist Party member Aaron O'Neill. We are going to bring you a presentation by Penny Hess from just yesterday at the Left Forum in New York City. We bring you now Chairwoman Penny Hess.
I want to just reiterate, I am the chair of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and this is the organization of the African People's Socialist Party that was created for white people. We work under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party, which is a worldwide organization, understanding that African people, Africans, are one people all around the world, that Africans on the continent of Africa, Africans in the Caribbean, Africans in Europe, Africans in Brazil, Africans in the United States are one people, the result of one process that was the assault on Africa, the kidnapping and turning into commodities of African human beings, and the use of African people as the foundation for capitalism and for the power of Europe and North America today, and colonized wherever they are on this planet. So this is a really important thing. In a lot of ways, the African People's Socialist Party is the heir and the continuation of the struggle as defined and understood by Marcus Garvey in the 1920s, and by Malcolm X, Kwame Nkrumah, and other forces who believe that Africa is the birthright of African people everywhere. So this organization, this party, right now exists in the United States, it exists in the Caribbean, it exists in different places in Europe, including UK, Sweden, Germany, and it also exists on the continent of Africa, particularly in Sierra Leone, in Kenya, and an increasing base in South Africa. And in fact, the leader of the African People's Socialist Party is Chairman Omali Yeshitela. This is his newest book called An Uneasy Equilibrium, which is really a profound analysis of the world today. And he will be traveling to South Africa later this year for an organizing tour, although he has been there many times. And he spoke at the 8th Congress of the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania. So we're going to talk more about what this is, but this is a solidarity committee with the African Revolution, with the understanding that imperialism must go, that this system is a parasitic capitalist system, and it has to go for the majority of the people on the planet to be free, to be liberated. There's no coexistence that's possible there. This is a revolutionary organization, and we are a revolutionary organization with the job to organize in the white community, to win other white people like ourselves, to begin to understand the world as it really is, as this crisis of imperialism that we see right now, and what is our relationship as white people to that? What is our history, and how do we change it? And I think that as Chairman O'Malley just described so brilliantly in this book, and anytime you can speak, and let me just ask you, first of all, are any of you familiar with Chairman O'Malley Chatella, with the Uhuru movement? Is this the first time that you've heard of this? And you know that Uhuru is a Swahili word for freedom. It was popularized by the Mau Mau, by Dedan Kimathi, and the struggle, the anti-colonial struggle in Kenya in the 1950s. And it has been used in the African liberation struggle here and around the world since then. O'Malley Chatella was an activist in SNCC in the 1960s, and he created his own organization called Junta of Militant Organizations, JOMO, that was based at the time in the South, in Florida. And the headquarters of the African People's Socialist Party is still in St. Petersburg, Florida. This is the newspaper, the Burning Spear newspaper, which has been published in an unbroken line since 1968, the only voice of the African Revolution, the Black Power newspaper that is still published. And it's an amazing paper. It's still only $1. I urge you to get one. So in 1976, the African People's Socialist Party formed the Solidarity Committee, the African People's Solidarity Committee, with a call to people in the white community to take the stand. I joined them. I had never been actually an activist, and I was very interested to find out what this meant to be in a solidarity committee, to work in the white community, and to begin to understand the ideas of the theory and political understandings of the African People's Socialist Party, and their theory, which is called African internationalism. And of course, I am not an African, but I am an African internationalist, because we can begin to see the world through the eyes of the oppressed African community and oppressed peoples around the world. And I think that, you know, that we're looking at a time of deep crisis of this system, politically, economically, you know, this recovery that's supposed to have happened and it didn't. And I think the most significant thing that we see is all around the world, oppressed peoples rising up. And the U.S. can't do what it had done for so long with impunity. It can't go into a country and begin to steal its oil or do whatever it wants to do without having a fight back of some sort. We see this. We see this every day, and we see it inside this country, because when we are under the leadership of the African Revolution, with the understanding that African people are one people wherever they have been dispersed around the world, then we understand that the problem, the contradiction inside this country is not racism. It's not racism. It's not the ideas in somebody's heads. It's colonialism that we face right here inside this country. That African people, Mexican people, indigenous people, oppressed peoples, there's an invisible wall that's not really so invisible, if you will, of colonialism right here with two different realities. And when we look at the world as it really is, we know that's true. And we can see, you know, struggles like the Occupy movement a few years ago saying that we're the 99%. But wait a minute, white people are not the 99%. We are not the 99%. We cannot come into a situation and equate ourselves with all the people on the planet Earth who at best make $10 a day or $2.50 a day or $1 a day to live on, while we live in the most wealthy situation, you know, economically on this planet. And the conditions inside this country for Africans, for Mexicans, and for white people are quite different, with white people still today controlling 22% of the resources, or 22 times the assets of an African family inside this country. So we want to look at this reality, we want to examine it, we want to talk about it, and we want to build it. I want to say also that the African People Solidarity Committee exists in St. Petersburg, Florida. We also exist in Oakland, California. We have an organization in Philadelphia and also in Gainesville, Florida, and in the Minneapolis area. So we're building, we have every year the Day in Solidarity with African People, which is our tribute, where we have events like this and we talk to other white people. And we also raise resources for the work of the African People's Socialist Party, building all over the world. And we take up the cry and the work of reparations to African people from the white community, from white people ourselves. So we want to talk about that. And I have a PowerPoint. I want to talk a little bit about that. The next slide is Chairman Ali Shatila. And yes, this is Chairman Omali Yeshitela, the leader of the Uhuru Movement, the African People's Socialist Party, and that all the ideas that I'm presenting today, that I understand, come from him, come from the African People's Socialist Party and the struggle for African liberation. These are not conclusions I came to on my own. This is from the leadership of the African Revolutionary Movement that permits me and all white people and anybody in the world to begin to understand things as they really are. So the fundamental question, well, we're talking about the crisis of imperialism, if you go forward, the resistance of African people and oppressed people, Arab peoples all around the world, Venezuela, South America, the struggles there, the recognition that U.S. imperialism must be defeated for the peoples of the planet Earth to live. The resistance in Ferguson, which the Uhuru Movement was a critical part of. The resistance in Baltimore, where the Uhuru Movement was on the ground there. And all over this country, where we see the struggle of the African community calling for the demand that the African People's Socialist Party has put out of black community control of police. The question of power, not the question of anti-racism, but the question of control over their lives and resources. So when we begin to understand the world, you can go to the next slide. When we begin to understand the world as it really is, we have to look at the fact that this system is built on the enslavement of African people. That's how capitalism got its start. The system and the power and wealth of this country, of America, is built on slavery. It's built on the genocide of the indigenous people. It's built on the theft of their land. It's built on colonialism around the world. Without slavery and genocide, there would not be a United States of America. There would not be that. This is intrinsic. This is in the DNA of capitalism and of the United States and European world power itself. Without it, it could not exist. And this is really critical to understand, because if we look at the Middle Ages in Europe, you know how in school we learn that the Middle Ages are the, quote, dark ages. There was poverty. You know, we say dark ages. I would say the white ages. But in any case, we learn this thing, you know, this idea that, you know, there was feudalism in Europe, there was poverty, there was ignorance. But that was true in Europe, but that wasn't true for the Mayan people, that wasn't true for the Aztecs, that wasn't true in China, in India, in many other places throughout the world where there were great civilizations going on. And what we're seeing now, what we're seeing is that with this resistance, with this struggle of anti-colonial struggles, for the ability for oppressed peoples to have control of their narrative, that the understanding of what is history and what is reality is switching. It's being flipped. It's being flipped. And this is challenging to the white narrative. This is challenging to that, because suddenly we're beginning to, everything is being challenged. And you see it now, that we can't, you know, the U.S. can't celebrate Columbus anymore because there's indigenous people out there saying he was the perpetrator of genocide. You know, it can't celebrate things that we've seen in the past, because the reality of it is being challenged every day. And this is what Ferguson represents. This is what the struggles and the uprisings all around the country in the African community represent. And this is really powerful. And, you know, if we look at history, we can see that in the Middle Ages, Europe was poor. It was disease-ridden. There was plague sweeping Europe, killing at times up to 50% of the population of Europe and everything in it. There was oppression, and white people were serfs, the vast majority, tied to the land, ruled by kings and queens of feudal Europe. But what changed that? And even the feudal lords and ladies had no wealth, they had no money, they had land, but this began to change as this capitalism is being born. And it was born through, in the 1400s, Portugal sending ships out to Africa to begin to assault Africa, first to bring the gold back into Europe, and then to turn African human beings into commodities. You could do the slide. And yeah, thank you. And then, you know, we begin to see this change in Europe at this time. I mean, it's really interesting, because I had the opportunity to be at the British Museum a couple of times, and you could see, you know, the whole history of Africa and Egypt and this incredible, you know, beautiful, beautiful art and relics and, you know, just huge statues and other kinds of things from the ancient era of Africa that was stolen by the British. You can't see that when you're in Africa. You have to come to Europe to see it, or Paris or Britain. But, you know, you can see that history 5,000, 6,000 years ago. But if you go to the other part of the museum, there's the part about Europe and the whole history of Europe. And when you look at the same time period in Europe, you just see, you know, people sitting around caves and you know, just there's like a dagger or something. That, you know, there's just nothing. There's nothing. There is not that history. There wasn't fire for, you know, for a certain number of thousands of years after that. So when you begin to see the changes that happen in Europe, you begin to see that in the, you know, the Renaissance in the 15th century, the 16th century, and the 17th century in Europe coincides with the assault on the rest of the world, on the assault on Africa, the assault on Asia, the Philippines, the assault on the Americas, that began to bring gold, silver, and resources flowing back into Europe for the first time since the Roman Empire, you know, back in that time. And so it completely coincides with this. The wealth of Africa, the wealth stolen from Africa and turning human beings into commodities, was the basis of the first stock markets of the Western world, of Amsterdam, of New York. We know that in 1492, Columbus began the genocide in the Americas. Almost within 50 years, many places in the Caribbean, the indigenous people were already wiped out. And this land, this understanding of rape, of torture, of murdering and just slaughtering the people to steal the land, to steal the resources, was already foremost on the minds of the conquistadors and all the people, the white people that came there at that time. By the 16th century, already Europe was in the Philippines, Magellan, and in Southeast Asia, and India and China, And there was already, you know, a sense of a global economy that was growing. People talk about globalization. Capitalism started as a global economy. That's how it was born. It was born with the most incredible violence that we can ever imagine. We see what's called the triangular trade, already a global situation where African people, again, you know, we have to begin to look at the reality that the system, capitalism, was born on the enslavement of African people. And that's just such a cold, you know, word, a cold description of it. But when in reality, it was a destruction of a whole culture, destruction of civilizations, theft of land, theft of dignity, you know, theft of people's ideas, even the science stolen from Africa and from the indigenous peoples that was colonized by the white world as white science, as European civilization, as the greatest civilization on the planet Earth. So we know that, you know, there was colonialism, there was the enslavement of African people, there was resistance, and this resistance throughout this U.S., and of course, as we know, the enslavement of African people was also all throughout the Caribbean, it was in Brazil, it was in South America, it was a huge system that brought enormous resources to Europe and the basis of the economy, also of New York, and we have to understand that slavery, the enslavement of African people, wasn't just about the South. New York City had a direct relationship to it. As we know, there is the graveyard, there's the cemetery of African people under Wall Street, and the slave market of New York was on Wall Street. And to me, it is so telling, it is so apropos that the buildings of Wall Street rest on the bodies of African people. That just tells the story of how we can understand the world economy today. And, you know, we understand that this conquest, this rape of the people on the planet Earth to benefit the white world was not just something that the governments took on. It was something that white people themselves understood, because millions of white people who were poor in Europe came to this country, came as immigrants to Ellis Island, right here to New York, with the understanding that this ladder of success, the streets paved in gold, were here because there was slavery, because there was genocide of the indigenous people, and you could steal the land, you could be part of that. The United States government gave away, you know, millions of acres of land to white people to go to the West, and all they had to do was pick up the gun against the indigenous people and be part of a colonized army. This is our history. This is our history of violence. There was an understanding. Cecil Rhodes, you know, and I don't know if people have seen it, but in Zania or South Africa right now, there's a struggle going on among the students to bring down the statues of Cecil Rhodes on the college campuses in Zania. Have you seen that? They call it the poo revolution, because they were throwing, you know, poo on the statues. And ultimately, in one city, in one campus, the statue was brought down of Cecil Rhodes. They forced that. And it shows that Cecil Rhodes was the British Empire's leader in Africa who wanted to enslave Africa. He said he wanted to build a railroad from Cape to Cairo to go all the way across, you know, up and down Africa to bring the resources out, to bring the human beings out in order to bring wealth for Britain, for the white people of Britain and the workers. And, you know, there's something that is quoted by Cecil Rhodes, because he wrote once, "I was in the East End of London, a working class quarter, yesterday and attended a meeting of the unemployed." He said, "I listened to the wild speeches, were just a cry for bread, bread. And on my way home, I pondered over the scene, and I became more than ever convinced of the importance of imperialism," he says. He says, "My cherished idea is a solution for the social problem, i.e., in order to save the 40 million inhabitants of the United Kingdom from a bloody civil war, we colonial statesmen must acquire new lands to settle the surplus population, to provide new markets for the goods produced in the factories and mines. The empire, as I have always said, is a bread and butter question. If you want to avoid civil war, you must become imperialist. And that's a profound statement, because he's saying, you know, the workers were ready to rise up in Britain. And he's saying, well, all we have to do is win them to becoming imperialists, to understand that, first of all, to defend the wars of occupation of Britain, to go there and settle, and to basically be patriotic, to support a system that rests on the oppression of everybody else on the planet. So when we look at, I had a picture of a lynching. I don't know, I'm not sure where that is, a little bit over. Yeah, okay, so, you know, we look at this history, and this is our history in the United States. This is just one example. But in this country, there were at least 10,000 recorded what's called a lynching, which is terrorism towards the African community, carried out by white people, by white working people, not fighting their bosses, not struggling even as workers, but struggling to say, I'm white, I deserve the resources that are being stolen from the system, that are being ripped off from everybody else. And I'm proving I'm white by attacking, slaughtering, murdering African people. And the same thing happened with indigenous people. And we have to really look at that, because there's a really amazing book, and I would urge you to get it. It's called 100 Years of Lynchings. And it has no commentary in it. The only thing that's in it are the actual newspaper articles from all of these lynchings. And it just tells the story in that way, that were published in black newspapers of the time. And what's called a lynching, we have to know this, because this is our history. This is our history. This is the history we have to take responsibility and look at, you know, and realize that every dream and every aspiration that white people have ever had comes from oppressing, murdering, raping Africans, indigenous people, and colonized peoples around the world. That's just the truth. That's just a matter of historical record. When you look at lynchings, it wasn't some furtive thing that happened in the middle of the night. These were 10,000, 20,000 people came to them. They were huge. That a lot, often Africans were burned alive, starting at the feet. There's pictures of it, actually, this picture on the cover of Overturning the Culture of Violence. This was in Kansas City, burned alive, not hanged. People standing around laughing, having fun. There's many cases where white people brought their little children, the little girls dressed up with bows in their hairs and little pinafores on, to be posed in front of the bodies. And Africans, when you read this, their sexual organs were cut off, their ears were cut off, their fingers were cut off, and they were sold as souvenirs. And there are places in this country where white people still have those in jars and bottles somewhere. This is the reality. Mothers were there, grandmothers were there, children were there. It was almost the basis of the county fair. There were dances there. The bands came. There were vendors. Like, we have vendors out here selling their wares at these. It was a huge, huge cultural and terrorist stand of white people. This is the basis of our society. So, you know, it's the same thing I want to say I want to say that this book, by the way, is called Overturning the Culture of Violence, and it's where, because we give these kind of presentations, we did a lot of research on, and this was, you know, done a few years ago. There's much more out now on the kind of terrorism and crimes against humanity committed by regular white people in this country. And one of them also were the crimes against the indigenous people, where white people joined the volunteer cavalry and were part of wiping out native people from their lands. There was the case of the Sand Creek Massacre, where volunteer white people attacked indigenous women in Colorado, women and the elderly, men were out hunting. And it's recorded that they did things like take the women's babies and with their bayonets, you know, just like toss the baby back and forth while holding the mother down to watch them. They rape the women and they cut out their vaginas and use them as hatbands, as souvenirs. I mean, this is just regular white people. And when actually the U.S. government sent a representative to Denver to say, what's going on here? They said, we either have to live with the native people or we have to exterminate them. And they say that the cry from the crowd of the Denver Opera House where this meeting was taking place, packed to the gills, was exterminate them, exterminate them. This was the politic of the land that we live on. And this was the politic of white people. This was our stand. And when we look at that, then we can understand that it's not a question of racism, it's colonialism. White settlers, it's colonialism inside the borders of the United States. When we look at around the world, when we look at the question of colonialism, we look at what happened in Africa. What do we know the history of Africa? Do you know that in Congo, when we see the struggles that are in Congo, that nobody talks about, by the way, that 7 million people, mostly women and children, have been killed in Congo in the last 10 years in the struggle, because Congo is where today 87% of the world's supply of coltan, which is necessary for all cell phones and computers to operate as a conductor of electricity, 87% of it is there. So of course, Apple, Dell, Sony, all of them are backing these armies that are there, murdering and raping and slaughtering the people that are there to control those resources in the world. That's imperialism. That's what we live at the expense of. And in the Congo, it didn't start there though, because in the 19th century, there was King Leopold of Belgium who went into the Congo to harvest rubber for the burgeoning automobile and bicycle tires and other things that they needed rubber for balls and soccer balls and stuff. And in that Congo alone, he killed Belgium and King Leopold were responsible for the murders of 10 million Africans. And those that lived were intimidated if they resisted in any way by the cutting off of their hands. And children's hands were cut off, and missionaries there wrote back that there were mountains of hands. This is the violence that colonialism is built on. This is DNA of our system, of our lives. The same is true in Namibia, what is called Namibia today, which was called Southwest Africa, which was colonized by the Germans, which got the basis for what happened in Nazi Germany. They rounded up the Nama people and the Herero people into the desert and surrounded them so that they could not leave the desert. And they were left there without food and water and died a hideous death. And actually, the Nama and the Herero survivors have been going to Germany to get reparations, with it, which Germany won't acknowledge in any way, the genocide against them. And you can go throughout. You can look at what Cecil Rhodes did. You can look at what Winston Churchill did in the Sudan, in southern Africa, in what was Rhodesia after Cecil Rhodes and now is Zimbabwe, and in Azania or South Africa, where Churchill writes, oh, we had a splendid little war. They just invented the machine gun, and we killed 5,000 resisting Africans in one afternoon. And he goes, it was just great. And after that, they had a dinner of roast beef and champagne to celebrate it. I mean, this is the history of colonialism. This is the basis for the society that we live in, the social system that we have to look at. And so when we talk about the relationship of white people to this, the ability of our own community to be able to put on the rose-colored glasses, to put on the blinders, so that we don't have to look at any of this history. And when we see Africans rising up in Ferguson and in Baltimore, and we're the ones that will say, why are you so angry? What's wrong with you? Can't we talk about this? Why do you want to be violent? Well, the violence comes from this system. The violence is imposed on oppressed peoples, African people in this country. And oppressed people have a right and even a responsibility to resist by any means necessary to end the violence, to end the violence. And whether we're talking about in the Congo, or whether we're talking about in Haiti, or whether we're talking about here, or in Venezuela, or someplace in the Arab world, the oppressed peoples have a right to, by whatever means are needed, to rout out and destroy the oppressor so that they can live, so that they can have control of their own resources, to feed their own children, to go forward with their own society in solidarity with the rest of the world. And if we really believe that we can have peace, that we want peace, that we can have a system and a world in which there isn't war and there isn't competition between peoples, but the ability of all human beings to live, then imperialism has to go, because it's built on a parasitic relationship to the rest of the world that sucks the blood of the people on the planet. And everybody, the majority of the people in the population, have an interest in this system going down by any way that it can possibly go down. And if we as white people continue to, you know, to sit here and to see ourselves as Americans rather than separating ourselves from a system that can only exist by the suffering of other people, that can only give us the ability to have affordable college because everybody else is dying on the planet, that can only, you know, give us our demands by oppressing everybody else, that's opportunism. And that's stupidity. Because a child dying in Africa or somewhere in Asia or the Arab world doesn't give a damn about your student loan. They're trying to survive. They're trying to live and have imperialism and war off their backs. You know, so I think that this is a really powerful thing, that as white people, this can open our eyes to the rest of the world. We're not Americans. I reject that. I am not part of a system built on that. And a system built on murder, rape, and terror cannot be reformed. It cannot be, and it has to be obvious to us if we read the world news every day. It can't go on this way. We can't change it. It can't be a better, nicer, light imperialism. That can't happen. It has to go. And that is what oppressed people and African people inside this country in the 1960s, in the Black Revolution of the 60s, was a revolutionary movement. White power had to go. And white power is capitalism and imperialism. It makes sense. It just makes sense. There's no other answer. We live in a country where 2.5 million people are in prison. I mean, China, which has 1.3 billion people in population, has 1.5 million people in prison. This country has 300 million population and has 2.5 million people in prison. And at least half of them are African. Half of them are African. And another third, at least, are Mexican, Spanish-speaking, indigenous, and other oppressed peoples in this country. So when in the Soviet Union era, the U.S. used to refer to the Soviet Union with its gulag. This is where the gulag is, right here. Where's the outcry from the left forum? You know, we're talking about the conditions of oppressed people and African people around the world for our benefit. And the first thing that's on a plenary here is something about Greece? Mm-hmm. When there are people in this country rising up for their independence, for their freedom and their liberation? And we're going to talk about Greece? And yeah, Greece might be the poor cousin of France and UK, but it still benefits from what Europe is based on the rape of the rest of the world. So we're talking about the period of the anti-colonial struggle and anti-neo-colonialism. because Obama is a symptom of this crisis. They had to put Obama in because they couldn't have another white man going around the world talking about peace and human rights. And as we can see, Obama has given more money to the banks, has supported imperialism, has had a war strategy internationally that puts Bush to shame, and who has never addressed the conditions in the African community or lifted one finger to help it. He has denounced reparations, separated himself from that, denounced African fathers, you know, all of the statements that he's done. And I think it's pretty clear that he's white power in blackface. You know, he is neocolonialism, just like Mobutu was, or anybody else in Africa who's in power in Africa, Haiti, or anything else is in power because the revolutionaries that were there, like Patrice Lumumba and Kwame Nkrumah, were murdered by the U.S. government and getting out of there. The people who spoke for the interests of African people were killed, were murdered, were assassinated. Like a Lumumba, his body chopped up and put into vats of Africa of acid so that he would never even be seen as a martyr again. Neocolonialism, and what we see now is this struggle against neocolonialism in this country and in this world. And it's a powerful period that we live in, and it's a challenging period. So we're talking about the question that it's not good enough to say that we're struggling against racism. Racism is an idea. Racism says, basically, racism puts the onus of the struggle onto the Africans. It says, well, we want to like you now, so what's wrong with you? Why can't, come on, we're all going to get along now, so why are you so mad? You know, it's basic, and it's also basically a support of the system. It's saying that we can integrate, that reform can help us. But the fact is that there is colonialism inside the borders of the United States, and white people are and have been settler colonizers, just like in occupied Palestine, in Israel. The same relationship, the same thing. So we are talking about the ability and the opportunity and the necessity of the white population, of Europeans, wherever we are, whether we're in Europe, whether we're in the United States, whether we're in South Africa or Kenya or Israel, to begin to see the world as it is, to begin to stand in solidarity with the just struggles of African and oppressed peoples everywhere for their land, for their resources, for self-determination and control over their lives. And that our identity is one in solidarity, that we as white people can either go down with this sinking ship, if that's where our identity is, with America, with Europe, that people around the world have a tremendous interest in bringing down, or we can stand in solidarity and be part of the new world, be part of the world created through the liberation of Africa, through the ability of human beings to reconnect with their humanity by getting power over their lives and their resources and their culture again. And, you know, there's a lot of talk in the white communities about the whole environmental issue. And I find that very incredible that an environmentalist would not be an anti-imperialist. Because the same system that destroyed whole human cultures, that committed genocides against the peoples on the planet Earth, of course doesn't care about the ocean and the seas and the ozone layer and climate change. Of course it doesn't. You know? But the fact is, we're not going to change it in our little part of the world. We're not going to change it for white people. The only thing that will change the environment is overturning parasitic capitalism built at the expense of everybody else. Capitalism is not going to fix itself. It can't. And it's built on raping humanity and raping the earth. And so if you're an environmentalist, it's in your interest to stand in solidarity, to join the African People's Solidarity Committee. Anything that we have, any problem that we have as women, as workers, as LGBT, is the same system that oppresses the people on the planet, that is colonizing everybody else, is oppressing us. But we can't get our little piece while saving this pedestal upon which the rest of the world is under our feet. We can change the world by standing in solidarity with the people on the pedestal who have kept us alive, but who want their freedom now, who must have it, who must have the struggle to wipe out imperialism off the face of the earth. And we're in a period where this is happening, where people are talking about this, where people are struggling, where people are taking it on. And we have the ability to join the world, to be part of creating a new world, a part of creating a society in which all human beings can live. But to do that, we must raise the question of reparations, that everything that we have is stolen from somebody else. We have to understand that the resources and the people on the planet Earth, 80% of them are in the white world. 80% of the pollution is the responsibility of the white world. And the people on the planet want their, need their resources back and have a right to it. And this is the struggle that's going on. We can unite with that. We can say imperialism has to go. I want to be part of this incredible experiment, this incredible struggle that is changing and transforming the world the only way it can change, the only way it can change. So I want to call on people to join the African People's Solidarity Committee, Uhuru Solidarity Movement, our mass organization, and be part of what we do, build the days in solidarity, organize in the white community, begin to you know, break out of our narrow viewpoint that sees only ourselves, and begin to feel and experience a genuine relationship with the struggles of everybody else on this planet that has one goal, to see imperialism go and to see a world of socialism and liberation be able to fix what imperialism has done and reinstate the ability of all human beings to live in peace, to live in prosperity, and to be able to create a world in which all human beings can live. Uhuru.
Uhuru. That was a fantastic presentation recorded just yesterday at the Left Forum of Penny Hess, chair of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And you're back listening to Reparations in Action here on uhururadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution. My name is Jamie Simpson, a member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and I wanted to mention that Reparations in Action is, of course, the weekly program of the African People's Solidarity Committee and its mass organization, the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. Both organizations of primarily white or Euro-American people working under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party to bring the message of African liberation, self-determination, and reparations into the heart of the white community. And that was a fantastic piece we just heard from Chairwoman Hess at the Left Forum in 2015. And we're going to move now to some public service announcements. You're listening to uhururadio.com.
Come, join us on the 2015 Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, a fun-filled, African-centered cruise aboard the Carnival Splendor, departing from the port of Miami, Florida, making stops in Cozumel, Belize, Honduras, and the Cayman Islands. With the unique perspective and insight of Omali Yekshitela, chairman of the African Socialist International, we invite Africans everywhere, as well as friends and allies, to share in this amazing experience of African culture, history, great food, and friendship, all on a relaxing cruise for 8 days from November 29th to December 6th, 2015. For more details and reservations for the 2015 Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, call our exclusive agency, Tanya's Travel, at 352-693-3034. You may also log on to uhurulegacycruise.org to view the itinerary and pricing information. Call today, because procrastination is the thief of time. The 2015 Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, setting sail November 29th through December 6th. Call Tanya's Travel at 352 352- 6933034. That's 352-693-3034. Or log on to UhuruLegacyCruise.org, and we'll see you on the open sea.
Uhuru, you are back listening to Reparations in Action here on Uhuru Radio. And I apologize for the technological glitch we're having there. This is Jamie Simpson, your host. And we just listened to a fantastic presentation from Chairwoman Penny Hess of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And we want to turn now to our chairman of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, Jesse Neville, who is currently in New York City. So we're going to be turning now. Jesse, Comrade Chair Jesse Neville, are you on the line with us? Okay, great. He'll be on the line in just a moment. I want to express appreciation to the entire Uhuru Radio team and to the African People's Socialist Party for giving us this hour every week to bring the message of African liberation, reparations, and self-determination into the white community. And someone who does that on a regular basis is Jesse Neville, our chair, who we're getting in touch with right now. Went to New York along with Chairwoman Hess and African People's Socialist Party, Aaron O'Neill. And we have on the line with us right now, Jesse Neville. Uhuru, Jesse, welcome to Reparations in Action.
Uhuru, Jamie, thank you.
So we just listened to that profound presentation laid out by Chairwoman Hess. Can you tell us how it went this weekend as the Uhuru movement attended the Left Forum in New York City?
Uhuru, Jamie. Yeah, that was a very profound presentation. And that room where that presentation took place was the only room in this building where any discussion of that sort took place over the last 3 days. And I think it was really important that we were here as the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and that Aaron O'Neill from the African People's Socialist Party was able to speak and bring the perspective and strategy of the African working class, you know, to anyone that is interested in joining in principled solidarity. So it's been a good experience to be here. We've been selling T-shirts from Planet Uhuru Apparel and the books of Chairman O'Malley Shatella and Penny Hess. And we have recruited one new person that wants to become a member who lives here in New York. So it's been going well.
Outstanding to hear that. It's surprising to hear you say that this was one of the only conversations that addressed this issue when the theme of this event was no justice, no peace. So that is a little surprising, but it's very encouraging to hear that we've won a new member into the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And I just want to ask you, Jesse, we do have a little bit of time to speak with you. What are some ways that people can go about supporting the African liberation movement in a principled way, if they are allies or from the white community?
Well, one of the things that we've been talking to people about here is the campaign for the Days in Solidarity with African People. And this is the campaign that the Solidarity Movement carries out every year to build in as massive a way as we possibly can a movement for reparations to African people in the white community. And the theme of this year's campaign is Reparations for Stolen Black Lives, as a tribute and recognition of all of the African lives that have been stolen from the African community by this vicious colonial system, whether it's by the police, as we've seen in this country, where every 26 hours another African is killed, every 8 hours another person is killed, disproportionate number of them African and indigenous people, or whether it's by the mass incarceration of African people, or any of the other forms of genocide that take place against the black community in this country and worldwide. So those are that's a campaign that's going to culminate in a series of events throughout the country. And the list of places where those events are taking place is ever growing. We hope New York will be added to that list, and we hope that, you know, wherever the listeners are located, that your city, your town will be added to that list as a place where a day in October becomes a day in solidarity with African people.
Excellent. Thank you, Jesse. I agree with you. Those are some outstanding ways people can take part of this genuine movement. You know, and we're having this conversation in the wake of the ongoing killings, as you laid out, of African people and other oppressed people, and also the impunity with which the police are still able to operate. We just saw recently this killer cop in Cleveland walked after having jumped on top of this car and unloaded 15 rounds at least at point blank range at two unarmed African people, killing them dead. Was there any sense of outrage that people were talking about this, talking about reparations? Was there any other workshop that discussed reparations for stolen black lives?
Oh, absolutely not. You mean at the Left Forum here?
Correct, at the Left Forum.
Not in any way whatsoever. In fact, what you have here is essentially an oasis of white leftist serenity where all around the world, there's this powerful resistance coming from African people and other oppressed peoples, and just absolute genocidal carnage being wrought against the masses of the people of the world. But there is no outcry. In fact, as Penny mentioned in her presentation, the opening plenary session of this conference was on so-called European revolutionary politics, the situation in Greece, where you have revolutionary resistance happening right inside U.S. borders. So I think the obliviousness of the white left and the white population is something that we have a responsibility to really wrestle with as the solidarity movement, and that's why we're here, mm-hmm. and that's why we will continue to be everywhere we can be to interrupt the typical discussion that happens in places like this and make a real serious call for white people who are outraged by what is happening to African people, by the racial divide, as it's been called, that we see between Africans and white people in this country and worldwide, to take a genuine principled stance under the leadership of the African Revolution. That's what this is about in the final analysis. We have a responsibility to take a stand of genuine solidarity with the struggle of African people to be free from colonialism. And that's the message that we've been putting out over these last 3 days.
Well, I'm glad to hear that at least a few folks received that message, and it should be heard as far and wide as possible. I want to mention to our listeners briefly, if you're interested in doing this kind of anti-colonial work that takes responsibility for our colonial legacy, you can join the Uhuru Solidarity Movement right now by going to www.uhurusolidarity.org/join-USM. And Jesse, can you tell us the next date of a planning meeting for the Days in Solidarity with African People? I know we have web conferences.
Well, next Sunday at 2 o'clock, we will be having, 2 o'clock Eastern Time, we will be having a phone meeting of the National Committee to build the Days in Solidarity with African People. And everyone is invited to attend that to learn more about not only how you can build a Day in Solidarity event, but how you can take what we're calling the Reparations Challenge and build a fundraiser to raise resources as an expression of reparations to the African community, raising money for the African People's Socialist Party's liberation program. So that is this next Sunday, a week from today, on the 7th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And to get the information about that, you can give us a call or give us an email at info@uhurusolidarity.org. Or you can call 727-888-3797 to get more information about that.
Great. That was 727-888-3797 to get more information. That was Chairman Jesse Neville of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. He's speaking to us live from New York City at the Left Forum. And I want to give a shout out to all the people who went to that conference, especially from the Uhuru Movement. Thank you. Thank you, Jesse. And thanks to all the listeners of Reparations in Action, and especially to Darren St. Pierre, our fantastic engineer. We look forward to seeing you next week. Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Well, you better listen, my sisters and brothers, because if you do, there are voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the they're crying.